नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय एव कालो निमिषो जनानां आयुर्लवान्या वयवैक्षिणोषि कूथास्त आत्मा परमेश्च जो महांस त्वं जीव लोकास्य च जीव आत्मा त्वं एव कालो निमशो जनानां आयुर्लवाद्यावयवैक्षिणोषि कूथास्त आत्मा परमेश्यजो महांस त्वं जीवलोकास्यश्च जीव आत्मा त्वं एव कालो निमशो जनानां आयुर्लवाद्यावयवैक्षिणोषि कूथास्त आत्मा परमेश्यजो महांस त्वं जीव लोकास्यश्च जीव आत्मा
Thank you.
Tvam you eva indeed kala unlimited time animisha unblinking jananam of all living entities ayu the duration of life lava adi consisting of seconds moments minutes and hours avayavai by different parts kshinoshi reduce kutasta without being affected by anything atma the super soul paramesti the supreme lord aja the unborn mahan the great tvam you jiva lokasya of this material world cha also jiva the cause of life atma the super soul O my Lord, your Lordship is eternally awake, seeing everything that happens. As eternal time, you reduce the duration of life for all living entities through your different parts, such as moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. Nonetheless, you are unchanged, resting in one place as the Supersoul, the witness and supreme Lord, the birthless, the all-pervading controller who is the cause of life for all living entities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, the word kutasta is very important. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated everywhere, He is the central, unchanging point. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddesher junatishtati. The Lord is situated in full in the core of everyone's heart, as indicated in the Upanishads by the word ekatvam. Although there are millions and millions of living entities, the Lord is situated as the Supersoul in every one of them. Nonetheless, He is one in many. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam, He has many forms, yet they are Advaita, one and unchanging. Since the Lord is all-pervading, He is also situated in eternal time. The living entities are described as parts and parcels of the Lord because He is the life and soul of all living entities, being situated within their hearts as the Antaryami, as enunciated by the philosophy of inconceivable oneness and difference. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. Since the living entities are part of God, they are one in quality with the Lord, yet they are different from Him. The Supersoul who inspires all living entities to act is one and changeless. There are varieties of subjects, objects, and activities, yet the Lord is one. Om Akyan Timidan Dasya.
Gyananjana chalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapatantikam. Bandeham Sri Guru, Sri Jutha Padakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raghunathanvitam, Tam Sajivam, Sadvaitam, Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padan, Sahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patithanam Bhavanibhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare.
O my Lord, your Lordship is eternally awake, seeing everything that happens. As eternal time, you reduce the duration of life for all living entities through your different parts, such as moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. Nonetheless, you are unchanged, resting in one place as the Supersoul, Witness and Supreme Lord, the birthless, all-pervading controller who is the cause of life for all living entities. I am very grateful to be back with all of you in New Dwarka. Special gratitude to Swavas Prabhu for allowing me to serve you today by trying to speak something from this very inconceivable, incredible verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why is it so incredible? Not only is the words spoken in Srila Prabhupada's illustrious purport so deeply enlightening, so is the setting in which it is spoken. See? What we have here in this beautiful sloka from the seventh Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 3, text 31. Such a comprehensive, beautiful explanation of the Supreme Lord. How he is eternally awake. He sees everything. at all times. He sees our every action. He hears our every word. He hears our every thought. He feels. He smells. He knows everything. Not only that, but he's in full consciousness of every word, every action, every thought that we have ever done in all of our previous lives. And he knows the same information for every living entity in all material and spiritual worlds. Vedaham samatita nivarata manani chajana bhavashani chabutidi mam tu vedana kashchana. Krishna tells us in the Gita, he knows everything that's happened in the past, all that's happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. But no one can know Krishna in full. We can know Krishna according to our own capacity of fullness. But Krishna is achintya, inconceivable. I was recently speaking at one ashram, the Bahamas, and that the guru of that ashram, very learned person, he invited me to speak on the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So I met with him privately, and he said, I've studied all the different siddhantas or philosophies, and I'm quite aware of what Beda-Beda Tattva is, how the Lord is simultaneously one and different from the living entity, how the Lord is simultaneously one and different from the creation, how the Lord is simultaneously one and different from all different manifestations of, and avatars of himself. But what I don't understand is this word achintya. Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. What do you mean by inconceivable? I was trying to explain everything that we perceive is inconceivable because it's coming from the inconceivable. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. The Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and therefore all emanations of the Absolute are perfect and complete. Mamaivamso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. In the living force, that the Atma within every living being is part and parcel of that Supreme Absolute Truth. The soul is inconceivable. Every aspect of material nature is inconceivable. If we just study it with an open mind, how is it possible that from a seed that is 1/8 the size of your fingernail, you just put it in the ground and add some water and sunshine, and it becomes a redwood tree? A tree where 20 adults holding hands it takes to make a circle around it. A tree that lives over 2,000 years old. A tree that's so high, according to the explanation of one of the trees I saw, if a 6-foot man looks up at that tree, it's the same experience as if a tiny mouse looks up at a 6-foot man. And that tree is producing hundreds and hundreds of those little tiny seeds, and in every single seed is another tree. Now that's in Northern California, where we have Apple Computers Company and Microsoft a little above. Can they create that? Even one tree? Even one blade of grass? They can make all sorts of incredible replicas. Everything in this creation is inconceivable. How is it that the sun planet, how much heat and light is it emanating at every moment? And according to our conception of heat and light, you have to keep putting fuel. Yes, if you stop putting fuel, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Who's putting fuel in the sun planet? And yet it's been burning for hundreds and millions of years, and it's not getting any smaller. As far as we could say, it's still the same size. And we're seeing the sun all day, every day, directly or indirectly. But do we ever really try to fathom the inconceivable, incomprehensible phenomena of what's going on right above our heads? And how the body is working? It's inconceivable. And this entire cosmic manifestation or the creation is just an insignificant aspect of the supreme existence of the Lord. And the supreme absolute truth, that the Lord, Krishna, doesn't even directly involve himself in the creation of this cosmic manifestation. It's his plenary portions of Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, Kshira Dakshayi Vishnu. He manifests, he expands himself for all this cosmic manifestation stuff. And meanwhile, the source, the Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, is simply enjoying beautiful pastimes of love. Sometimes in the form of a little baby, Bal Gopal, crying for the milk of his mother. So inconceivable. And to the degree we understand the inconceivable, unlimited nature of the Lord, we actually become very humble. This material existence consisting of the three modes of nature, sattva, raja, tama, is incomprehensible and very difficult to overcome. Well, one who understands this takes shelter of the Lord. Unless Krishna reveals himself to us, we can never understand him. If we think the Lord's conceivable, we will never take shelter. We will figure it all out ourselves. Will somehow or other, by the strength, by the intelligence, by the powers that we have, we will overcome the sufferings of this world. Samashita ye padapalavaplavam mahatpadam punya yasho marari. But this world is. Padam padam yadvi padam yatesham, yes. This world is incredible. It's just incredible. And there's danger at every step for everyone. But one who takes shelter of the Lord, this bottomless, shoreless ocean of material existence becomes like the quantity of water contained within the hoofprint of a calf. We can cross beyond it. In this verse, this is all being explained so philosophically, accurately. We find here in these beautiful prayers wonderful philosophy and wonderful glorification of the Supreme Lord. What is inconceivable about these prayers? They are being spoken by Hiranyakashipu, who is the most envious, arrogant, lusty, greedy, illusioned asura. And although what he's talking about the Supreme Lord, he's not offering his prayers to the Supreme Lord. He's offering his prayers to Brahma, one of the demigods. Now, it's hard to go into a psychological study of Hiranyakashipu, but we can understand something of what we're meant to learn from this. Hiranyakashipu hated Vishnu. There's external reasons and internal reasons. Externally, he hated Vishnu because Vishnu killed his brother Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyakashipu just thought that Vishnu did it unfairly and he was a coward and he killed his brother and he vowed to kill Vishnu. The reality is, Hiranyaksha, his brother, ran right toward Varahadev and challenged him to fight and insulted him with the most terrible words and attacked him. And the Lord reciprocated and ended his life. So why is Hiranyakashipu so angry? The real reason he hated Vishnu is he wanted to be the supreme. He wanted to be the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. But there's a problem with that. Because, Vishnu is the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. Bhagavad Gita tells us, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvam am shanti mirchati. If you want to be peaceful, just understand these three things. Krishna says, I am the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer of everything that exists. Then you can be peaceful. But as long as we're in these temporary, limited material bodies trying to be controllers, we'll be frustrated. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. Ahankara. Due to the false ego, we are thinking that we are the controllers. We're thinking that we're the doers of our activities. But where are we getting our brain? Where are we getting our heart? Where are we getting our hands to move? Where are we getting the power to speak? They're all being inconceivably given to us. And if we are the proprietor of anything, nobody and nothing could ever take anything away from us. But everything's temporary. There are powers that take it all away. If Hiranyakashipu was the proprietor of everything, then how is it that his brother was taken away from him? If he's the controller, how is it that this happened out of his control, beyond his control? So because we're clinging to that which is temporary so helplessly, there can't be any peace. And Hiranyakashipu, he's explaining it so well. The Supreme Lord is time personified. You reduce the duration of life for all living entities through moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. He knows all this. But Hiranyakashipu is not willing to give this glorification to Vishnu. Rather, he's giving it to Brahma. Why? Because by giving it to Brahma, he could get something in return. His words, although incredibly philosophical and beautiful glorifications of the Supreme Lord, some of the greatest Mahatmas say practically exactly the same things as Hiranyakashipu. But he's not offering his prayers with love. The same words. He's offering his prayers with selfish motivations. His little son, Prahlad, who was only 5 years old, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, in the form of Narasimhadeva, offered him any benediction he wanted. And what did Prahlad ask for? Nothing. He said, "Why are you asking to give me something? If I ask anything for myself, I'm not a devotee. I'm a businessman. A businessman will give to invest with the hope of getting something for himself back. If I ask for anything, then I'm not a devotee. All of my service, all of my life, everything is simply for your satisfaction. Sam siddhir haritoshanam, to please you. My service is an act of love. It's not an act of making a deal." That was Prahlad's mentality. Hiranyakashipu was the complete opposite. He's praising the glories of the Lord to Brahma with the hope that Brahma will give him whatever he wants. And previous to this verse, Hiranyakashipu, he had performed austerities. He was a master yogi. He stood on the tips of his toes with his arms raised and did not move even slightly. Year after year after year, decade after decade, for centuries, didn't move. And he was tested beyond our imagination. Sometimes it was raining. He was in the Himalayas. Sometimes it was snowing. Sometimes there were high winds. Sometimes in the summer under the heat of the sun, 100 degrees and more. And he didn't move. And sometimes when we're meditating, some little insect starts biting us. And what do? Usually we move it. If we honor the life of the insect, we move it. Some people just smash it. Well, Hiranyakashipu had millions of ants. First one start biting him. And these were really hungry ants. And they started biting him, and then his body was covered with ants, and they were eating him, and they were drinking his blood and eating his flesh, and he didn't move. And then they started building an anthill over him. So he couldn't even see the light of day. He was inside an anthill from his top of his head to the bottom of his feet. And there were millions of ants in the anthill eating him. He still didn't even flick a single ant away. And he didn't move from his tiptoes. He didn't even, go on his flat feet for all this time. That's serious yoga practice. Sometimes we try to hold our asanas for some duration of time. And he was controlling his breath. He was controlling his breath to such an extent. He mastered not only asana, but he mastered pranayama to the degree that the ants drank every drop of his blood and ate every molecule and cell of his flesh. All that was left was his skeleton. But he had mastered his breath where he could keep his life air circulating in his bones with full consciousness. It's not that anyone gave him anesthesia or he wouldn't feel all this happening to him. He felt it. He was fully conscious. But he was so determined. Nothing could divert him from his goal. And what was his goal? To be the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer of the universe. And he was in that skeleton form for a long time under that anthill. And it came to the point where he had awakened such siddhis, such mystical powers, that there were flames pouring from the top of his head. And the universe was being seriously affected by one skeleton in an anthill. His power. And he was fully conscious. He knew what was going on. He didn't have a brain. He didn't have a heart. He didn't have lungs or liver or anything. That was all ant food. There was nothing in the skeleton. It was just a skeleton. But he was fully aware. His Atma had such consciousness in this state. And then Brahma came down with Narada and so many other devas just because they had no choice. They had to. It was just too much what this person was doing. And they couldn't even find him because he was covered. And finally they saw some smoke and stuff and they traced him down. And Brahma saw he was a skeleton. Lord Brahma, from his kamandalu, his water pot, he just took water and went, but it was celestial water. He threw it upon the skeleton, and what a sight that must have been to see. How many of you would have liked to be here to see that? Where the skeleton, all of a sudden, just by being touched by the water, manifested this incredible, the most powerful material form the world has ever seen. He was beautiful. He had this aura, effulgence. Every limb of his body was harder and stronger than a thunderbolt. I was told one thunderbolt, how many volts and watts are in a thunderbolt? It's unbelievable, inconceivable. And it just flashes. A thunderbolt could knock your house down. thunderbolt could break the rocks of a Himalayan mountain. Every limb was greater than that. And he was so beautiful. And Hiranyakashipu looked at himself. He was proud. And then, if we just look in the middle of the chapter, we'll think he was a very liberated devotee. Because when he looked at Brahma, tears were pouring from his eyes and his limbs were shivering and trembling as if he was in ecstasy. And then with folded palms, he offered his prostrated obeisances, dandavats. He laid down in apparent humility before Brahma. And then gets up with folded hands and starts offering these beautiful prayers, very philosophical prayers, very precise prayers, perfectly in according to the Vedas, to the Supreme Lord, but not to the Supreme Lord, to someone else. In one sense, Brahma is a guna avatar. He is an empowered representative of the Supreme Lord. But we say not the Supreme Lord because Hiranyakashipu was going this indirect way because he wanted something from the Lord so that he could use it against the Lord. Now, this may sound very psychotic and irrational, but it's the deep-rooted propensity of the conditioned soul, knowing or unknowing. We want to be controllers of what Krishna is the controller of. We want to be the proprietor and the enjoyer. Hiranyakashipu was the very personification of envy and arrogance. He could not tolerate that anyone was greater than him. If anyone's greater than me, they must be destroyed. The first way he tried to destroy the Lord was by blaspheming him, by discrediting him, so that he himself and others would think that I'm greater. There's a certain type of very, very, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's gross. There's a certain psychological mindset of what it takes to criticize people, what it takes to blaspheme people. The ego finds satisfaction in that. If I can point out the faults in another, that makes me in a superior position. And in this material world, anybody could talk about anybody. Yes? And if a little person talks about a big people in a very condescending way, there's a certain ego there. Just see, this person, I can say whatever I want. The ego thinks, it gives the ego the satisfaction, I'm great. Therefore, Rupa Goswami explains, what does it actually mean to be a Vaishnava? We use the word loosely. What it really means to be a devotee is to not have the inclination to criticize anyone. Sometimes, in an act of compassion for others, we'll criticize. It's not criticizing. We'll correct. We'll warn. But that's in a humble spirit of service. But how that principle can be misused. Here is Hiranyakashipu saying the worst things about Vishnu, both to his face, or giving all the praises of Vishnu to somebody else. And it worked, at least temporarily, because Brahma, he wasn't. On one level, he was pleased with Hiranyakashipu because he was offering him such good praise, praising him as God. On another point, he was pleased because Hiranyakashipu just did the type of yoga austerities that nobody has ever done before. But in another part of Brahma, he's very displeased because his motivations were so arrogant. But Brahma said, all right, on this level, I'm pleased with you, so I'll give you whatever you want. What do you want from me? And Hiranyakashipu, at that point, it was the moment he was waiting for. It must have been a terrible austerity for him to offer these beautiful prayers. What to speak of all of the austerities before that? Now was the moment he's being offered any benediction by Lord Brahma. And he says, I want to never... First benediction. He had a whole list of benedictions. First benediction, I will never die. Brahma said, even I have to die. I can't give you that benediction. Brahma lives 311 trillion years. Now that may seem like he never dies. But for a little ant, it seems that our 180-year lifestyle or lifespan or 100 years, for a little ant that lives just maybe a few weeks, it seems like we'll never die either. But for us, you know, just like anybody could step on an ant at any moment, material nature can step on us any moment, whoever we are. So Brahma was a very enlightened person. He's Gunavatar. He said, I can't give you that. So Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to use his logical, philosophical intelligence to somehow or other get what he wanted. He has just, well, in these verses, I'm going ahead a little. But sometimes we get to do that in Srimad Bhagavatam class. He's offering these beautiful prayers of surrender. Hiranyakashipu really is surrendering, but he's surrendering for a very selfish purpose. It's not Shatarnagati, it's another kind of surrender. He's surrendering his life to Brahma. Body, mind, words, and life. But under the condition, he gets what he wants. You're not able to make me immortal? Then give me the benediction. I cannot be killed a day or night. On the land, in the water, or in the sky. I cannot be killed by any living being that has been created by you. I cannot be killed by any type of weapon. He logically made it in such a way that as far as he was concerned, he was immortal. There were no clauses. And then he asked for all the 8 mystic yogic cities in full. anima, lagima, prapti. Or he could perform unbelievable miracles. He could change his form. He was so powerful, whatever temperature he wanted, he would just chant a mantra and the world would become that temperature. How many of you would like that? When it was hot out, he didn't have to go into an air-conditioned room. When it was cold out, he didn't have to go into a heated place. He would just chant his mantra to some deva, and that deva, all the devas were his obedient servants. If he wanted it 73 degrees, it would be 73 degrees. He would decide what speed the wind should blow. He could do incredible things. He actually changed the system of karma temporarily, where you'd get rewards for impious acts and you'd get punished for pious acts. He was a very amazing personality. Could you imagine if he was living in L.A.? He would have a lot of followers. Not only, you know, if they saw his asanas, but what he could do to nature. Incredible. And practically, the entire universe, besides Brahma and Shiva, and some of the rishis in Tapaloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, everyone else was his follower. Either you followed him because you were just so mesmerized by his greatness, or you followed him out of total fear, because if you didn't, there's no way you could live. That was his life. So here he's offering his beautiful prayers to the Supreme Lord. With all, because he was a great scholar of the Vedas. He knew all these philosophies better than anyone could know them today, as far as the content. He didn't have a clue of the spirit behind the content. Says in the Bible that you may know the letter of the law, but not know the spirit and power behind it. The spirit of knowing all of this incredible philosophy, Vedaishcha Sarveraham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Krit Vedavidevaham Sarva Dharman Puritya Shamame Kam Sharanam. Just like this beautiful painting during japa I was looking at. Lord Chaitanya Srirangam. And that Brahman was, he was actually illiterate, kind of. He would recite the whole Bhagavad Gita every day, 700 verses. Can you imagine reciting all the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita every day and not even knowing how to read? He was stumbling through it. So it must have took him a long time. And he was reading the Gita right in the courtyard where the greatest scholars on earth would gather every day to read Vedas in perfect Sanskrit grammar, meter, and understandings. They looked at him like, what is he doing here? Sometimes they laughed at him, sometimes they criticized him, but he just kept reading. He was all alone. They were all together in groups. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was in Sri Gangam, he came to that courtyard. Let me see. And he saw that the Brahmin was crying while he was reading. Now, for most of us, we'd be crying because we were so, everybody else was criticizing us and laughing at us and not taking us seriously at all. Lord Chaitanya was, he's the Paramatma. He's in the heart of all living beings. He understood why he was crying. What is it in the Bhagavad Gita that's giving you such ecstasy? And the Brahmin said, actually, I don't even understand what I'm reading. Sometimes I say it wrong, sometimes I say it right. I do not even know the difference because I'm kind of illiterate. Then why are you sitting here reading every day? He said, because my guru, my spiritual master, gave me the instruction that every day I should sit right here where all the pundits and scholars are and read the whole text of the Bhagavad Gita. So whatever they may say or think, I'm just trying to please my guru. Lord Chaitanya was so happy. His intent. The Lord does not see necessarily what we offer, but the purpose, the intent in which it's offered. He had such a pure intent to please his guru. Even at the cost of being criticized, even at the cost of looking totally ridiculous in front of everyone, still, that was a detail. He wanted to please his guru. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. Because he knew that was the way of pleasing the Lord. And here the Lord was standing right before him. And Lord Chaitanya said, if you don't understand, how is it that you're crying? Why are you crying? And he said, I don't understand what the words mean, but as I'm reading, I'm just seeing this picture in my heart of Krishna, who is so beautiful. He has a most lovely blackish complexion, like a monsoon cloud, and he has beautiful lotus-like eyes. And he's so kind. He's taking the role of the charioteer to serve his own devotee Arjuna. And in this spirit I see Krishna speaking to Arjuna. And this completely conquers and melts my heart. Lord Chaitanya picked up that Brahmin from the ground and said, you are the true authority of the knowledge of the Gita. You know its essence. You have understood its spirit. And the Lord embraced him. And in embracing him, gave him prema bhakti, which he didn't necessarily give to all those great pundits who understood every single syllable probably in 11 different ways. Some pundits are like that. They can take a scripture and describe every syllable of every word in 11 different ways. And each one is fascinating. And each one is completely different than any other way. And each one has hundreds and hundreds of different verses to support that interpretation. This is what being a pundit means. This person just was in love with this Krishna who was serving his devotee. It was so beautiful. And Lord Chaitanya made this Brahmin his constant companion for the next 4 months while he was there. That was his intent. Samsadhir Haritoshanam. He understood the spirit of being a servant of the servant of the servant, and the Lord revealed everything to him. So Hiranyakashipu, such a great scholar, such a great mystic, but he didn't have the right purpose. And Brahma gave him every single thing he asked for. And Hiranyakashipu, he used it all profusely just to try to satisfy his own arrogance. And even having taken the seat of Indra, this is unimaginable. Well, people, what do they have to do to run for the President of the United States or State Senator or Mayor of Los Angeles? They have to go through so much trouble, campaigns and networking and compromises and so many things, to somehow or other get a seat. But then they know that they're going to have to, re-elections are going to come, and they can be uprooted at any moment. Well, Hiranyakashipu, he took the seat of Indra. And he didn't have to campaign. There was no elections for him. He assumed such power. And he had such wealth. But it describes in a future verse of the Bhagavatam that he was never happy because he couldn't control his mind and senses. However much wealth, power, sensual gratifications, prestige, it can never satisfy the heart. Because the more you get, the more you need. That was Hiranyakashipu. And little Prahlad, he was fearless. Hiranyakashipu lived, even though he had all of this that we're talking about, he lived in constant fear. Little Prahlad had nothing, but he was fearless. Abhaya Charanaravindare. Because he humbled himself before Krishna. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. This is fearless. Bhakti Vinod saying, Maro Birako Bijo Ichatohar Nityata Saprati Tua Adhikar. My Lord, if you want to protect me, nothing can harm me. If you want to kill me, please go ahead, kill me. I'm yours. I'm your eternal servant. You can do anything you like to me. Nityadas. I'm your eternal. In other words, he understood he was beyond birth. He was beyond death. He was the soul who was completely dependent in love on the Supreme Lord. That state makes us fearless in any situation. And that was Prahlad. Whether he was being thrown in a pit of venomous snakes. Now, if you were just walking through the grass and you saw one cobra, just one, and all of a sudden it just was 6 inches away from you and it raised its body and expanded its hoods and its tongue started flittering in and out and showed its fangs and was looking directly into your eyes, eye to eye, and started hissing. Be honest, would you be afraid? Well, Prahlad was thrown right on top of hundreds of such cobras and venomous snakes. He had no fear. How is that possible? Krishna, if you want to kill me, I'm remembering you. I'll go back to Godhead. Wonderful. If you want to save me, I'll just go on serving you in whatever situation you want. He was happy. And this, more than anything else, was destroying any trace of peace of mind in Hiranyakashipu. It's not that. Now we're going to get into his psychology a little. It's not that he just couldn't kill Prahlad. It's that he couldn't make Prahlad unhappy. He couldn't make Prahlad angry. He couldn't even make Prahlad a little bit afraid of him. This was too much. It drove him crazy. He went into total depression. Depression is a big thing these days. Hiranyakashipu, in such a yuga, went into total depression. And Sandana Marga had to try to make, you know, give him some therapy. They said, don't worry, he's just your son. He'll outgrow this stuff. And Hiranyakashipu said, if I cannot destroy him, then he will destroy me. He couldn't tolerate, I cannot control him. I cannot, not only I can't kill him, I can't put him in anxiety. I can't make him angry. Every time he comes before me, he with tears of love in his eyes and folded palms, he offers respect to me. I can't even get him to say a four-letter word against me. He only says nice things to me. I don't know if in Sanskrit, I think it's more, I think those words are more than four letters. But I'm trying to make it relatable to the English audience we have to. He was thoroughly humiliated by a person who loved him. These wonderful, incredible prayers. And Srila Prabhupada, his purport to this prayer of Hiranyakashipu is explaining the incredible philosophical beauty of the verse, as in the same way he gives purports to the verses of the prayers of Prahlad and Dhruva and the great saints. But then Srila Prabhupada also, you know, in the context of the whole story, is revealing to us the crucial, critical lesson there is to learn about this. What it really means to be a devotee. The external forms are crucial, but the purpose of the external form is to cultivate the spirit. And please understand, this is in the Srimad Bhagavatam for many reasons, and one is to warn us, to teach us of the Hiranyakashipu instincts that are within every conditioned soul. We may go through the forms, the sacred forms of purification. We may even, today Vijay Prabhu, he recited the 10 offenses to the holy names. And he began with that beautiful verse. What was it, Vijay Prabhu? Translation. So we can chant the holy names of the Lord. We could memorize the scriptures and recite them in an incredible way. But if we have an offensive spirit, then even if we chant for birth after birth after birth, we will not get the goal. We may get what Hiranyakashipu gets. We may get powers, we may get fame, we may get position, we may get prestige, but we will not get love of God. Unless we actually, just like Lord Chaitanya said, the holy name, the nine processes of devotional services are like water. The most purifying, nutritious water. And that seed of bhakti that's in our heart needs that water. We can't stop watering it. We have to put the water there. But Lord Chaitanya warns us, the tendency is we use that water to nourish weeds. That is Hiranyakashipu. He had serious weeds. And God, how much incredible water he put on those weeds. Can you imagine if he did all those austerities, if he did all that tapasya, if he offered these incredible prayers, which obviously took him so long to understand this philosophy, if he just used that to please Vishnu, he would be a Mahajan. Definitely. He would be right up there with Narada Muni. But he took all this incredible good stuff. He was watering the weeds. And Lord Chaitanya said, what are the weeds? Greed, arrogance, selfish lust, envy, anger, desire for prestige, desire to be the controller, enjoyer, proprietor. Ambarish Maharaj, he was a multi-millionaire king, but he was humble like a blade of grass. Raghunath Das Goswami, he had nothing but a loincloth, but he was humbler than a blade of grass. It's not just a matter of the external, it's understanding what that seed of bhakti and being focused on nourishing that seed of bhakti. And these stories are there in the Bhagavatam to warn us, because so often we just have the wrong desires. And we water those wrong desires as the aspiration of our sadhana. In the beginning stages, we become purified whatever our desires. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena. That whether we have many desires for material enjoyment, or whether we have desires for mysticism, or desire for liberation, or desires, no desires at all, sinful desires, pious desires, no desires, by remembering Krishna, we become purified. But we have to come to that stage where our desires change. Otherwise, we start watering weeds of those desires. Hiranyakashipu did all the right things for the wrong purpose. And therefore, he was so frustrated. He could control. He was saying to his people, he was saying to Prahlad, I move my eyebrow, and even the greatest demigods shake in fear. I'm wiggling my eyebrow a lot toward you. Why are you not afraid of me? I'm paraphrasing. He couldn't tolerate this. I can't get this child to be afraid of me. Frustrated. That's the way material nature works, whether we're Hiranyakashipus or whether we're just little insects. We just don't get our way. Srila Prabhupada gives the example, the tiger is the king of the forest, and all the animals of the forest are afraid of the tiger. But he said there's one little bird that's not afraid of the tiger. And that little bird spoils the tiger's whole life. Just a tiny little bird, like a little hummingbird kind of thing. Prabhupada explains the tiger's in the forest and the bird gets on the tiger's back where the tiger can't reach it. And wherever the tiger goes, the bird is chirping to all the other animals. The tiger is coming, the tiger is coming. So before the tiger gets there, all the animals run away. So the tiger's starving because he can't get any food because, you know, he's not a vegetarian. If he was a vegetarian, he could just eat the grass and be happy. But he has to kill and eat flesh and blood. That's his diet. But wherever there's a deer, and he sees a deer, and he's creeping up on the deer, and the little bird gets on his back and says, "Deer, get out of here, the tiger's coming." The deer runs away before the... So the idea is, whoever we are, whatever we do, material nature has a way of humbling us because we're just not the controllers. But when we understand that, we can seek the essence to be the servant, the servant, the servant. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Rukmini Dwarakadish ki jai, Ananti Gaudi Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.